You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
August 13th, 2010, Frankel wins for the first time at Newmarket, beginning an incredible run of 14 wins. All great streaks start somewhere, so start your own with Betfair's free bet streak. Simply bet £20 on the Betfair exchange and get a £5 free bet. With each free bet you win, you'll get another. It's that simple. Free bet streak from Betfair.
Weekly opt-in, back or leg exchange bets placed Monday to Sunday. Minimum odds of £1.55 free bet awarded at bet settlement, valid for 72 hours. T's and C's apply. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
The Final Furlong podcast is proudly brought to you by AtTheRaces.com, your ultimate resource for finding winners.
Welcome along to a bonus edition of the Final Furlong podcast, stateside special. I'm Emmett Kennedy, joined by AtTheRaces pundit and good friend, Mr. Peter Fornital.
How are you? I almost missed my cue there. I don't know how I missed my cue on the intro, but I did. Maybe you can tighten that up in editing.
So for everybody listening, there wasn't really a gap, but in real life, there was like a 10-second gap there. I was like, how? We were just talking. How did Peter drop away?
I was waiting for the "How are you, my man?" or something like that. You know, as a host, I was thinking it was coming, and then I realized it wasn't. And basically, I need another cup of coffee. It's a busy week around here with all these grade ones in Saratoga.
Oh, the same for me, man. I've got caffeine loaded up by the barrel load here, right in front of me in the studio. The reason we decided to do a standalone episode of the American discussion is because there's so much to talk about in America right now. It's kind of crazy. Trump. Portland, Ellen getting cancelled, James Corden replaces Ellen, then he gets cancelled because he's a jerk too. Oh wait, no, we're talking about Arlington, aren't we? Sorry, yeah. So it's mad. Like, America is mad right now.
Please don't make me talk about any of those things unrelated to racing. I may just start weeping openly about the state of our land here. But the racing still puts a smile on my face, and we've got some good stuff happening.
Yeah, some really good stuff, and we'll build to that. But we need to deal with the dark side of it, first of all, because genuinely, Arlington is one of my favorite race courses in the world. I love the Arlington Million meeting. You broke the news on the podcast a few months ago that the Arlington Million was gone this year, that it wasn't going to happen. And you also, you were suggesting that there was a problem there. That things were not looking good. But even when you gave that warning, I had no idea how stark the times really were for Arlington. And now it's gone. Arlington Park is no more. And Chicago has lost its premier race course. How did this happen?
Well, we're not quite there yet. That is the way it is going. There is racing at Arlington right now. But basically, the parent company, Churchill Downs, they're very famous. Full disclosure, a new partner on my podcast endeavors. I'm doing some work with the folks at CDI.
That's what I like to hear. Get that gravy, Peter. Get that gravy.
I don't think I'm saying anything that anybody doesn't know who follows these things. That they, you know, they're a publicly held company, and they feel obligations to their shareholders over any obligations to the sport of racing. And I'm not an expert on Arlington exactly, but it does seem like they've decided, not unlike with Hollywood Park before them, that this land to potentially be developed is going to be a lot worth a lot more than as a racing property. And they've got other properties in the Midwest, and it looks like they're going to be selling this off. And unless something unpredictable happens, and racing interests are somehow able to compete with the developmental interests and be able to make an offer that's competitive, it does seem like Arlington isn't going to be racing anymore. And it's just a terrible loss, obviously, for American racing, because this is a place where we've seen so much history over the years. And annually, like you, Emmett, I find that Arlington Million meeting to be one of my favorites, and have had just so many great memories, some scary memories too, some of the things that have gone on down there.
Storming home.
I'll miss it terribly if it ends up that this is the end for Arlington. It's still a little bit of a moving target in terms of no sale has been made, but the intention has been stated, and it doesn't look good for the future of racing at that storied Chicago venue. And I think everybody involved is going to be feeling the loss if you're a racing fan.
So probably slightly jumped the gun there with my comments, but that is the feeling though in America, like the feeling within the US press and your colleagues in the media rooms, virtually obviously because of social distancing, is that it's done. And this all comes from a quarterly earnings call where the CEO said the long-term solution is not Arlington Park, and they've talked about the license is going to go and they're going to sell the land. When Kempton was being flouted for similar things, that they were going to sell that, and the King George would move to Sandown, and it was all going to be redeveloped, there was uproar. And I was one of the people very much against that. Whatever about attendances to the race course, it's the prestige of the King George and St. Stephen's Day and Boxing Day and that race meeting being there and the Christmas hurdle. And there's obviously other massive races that take place at Kempton as well. But also, it's a city track. It's London. So if you properly promote it, and if you work it well, you can get racegoers there, and you can build the brand even more if you properly utilize what you have. Kempton has been saved. Chicago and racing it's a famous history. For this to go, like, what is the reaction from fans? What's the reaction from your colleagues? What is, you've already said that you're going to miss it, but what is the on the ground reaction?
I'd love to talk to some of my friends in Illinois about this, because I have a lot of friends who really Illinois racing is their thing. And I've been so busy dealing with things up here that I haven't done a good call around. There will be much eulogizing if this in fact does come to pass. But the few people I've talked to, I've seen blind rage, I think would be the best way to describe it. But I mean, these, you know, from a friend who grew up in Chicago, and his connection to the sport has grown to include his house in Saratoga, but he grew up going with his dad to Arlington, and people aren't going to be they're not going to be happy about it, but it's not going to turn them off the sport forever or anything. But it's very much like you start to see the racing fans are we're such a unique, not unique, we're such a tiny piece of the market in the sports landscape in the United States. We're almost like a cult. And you compare that and you think about Major League Baseball and American football, and you can see how some of these owners, I'm not in favor of publicly funded sports stadia. I do not like the idea of billionaires getting sports fans, the average people, workers, to finance their grounds essentially through taxation. It doesn't seem right to me. But this is kind of how they get away with it. When you see the emotional reaction people have when one of these things does go away, you can see how these billionaire owners in other sports are able to say to the fans, well, tell you what, unless we can get this bill approved to get some public money, we're going to move to Seattle or wherever, whatever. Nothing gets Seattle, whatever other city is available. And you can see the deep connections we have to the sporting venues where we were weaned on these great games that make up such an important fabric of our life and help us go from year to year and count out our lives and give us so much joy. It's a tremendous loss when one goes away. And it's not going to be easy to get over for a lot of people if that's the way it goes. I don't know. I want to hope against hope that, like Kempton, I mean, the Kempton story was reported as a done deal.
Yeah,
and
it
as
was
you pointed out that, yeah, there's a, that was worked out. So perhaps there's some way to develop land around, but somehow keep a racing presence. I don't know. Maybe I'm just hoping against hope, but I'm not quite willing to give up the idea just yet that they'll be racing there, but it doesn't look good at the moment.
And there is the culture that you've alluded to, and you can look at the St. Louis Rams. You know, they were gone to LA. Franchises get picked up and moved. That happens in America. It would be an alien concept to us. Like, there was uproar when Wimbledon.
Oh, Milton Keynes.
Yeah. There, we both said it at the same time. Good luck for us, hopefully. But like, there was absolute uproar over that. And there still is, and rightly so, by the way. But it's not something that we really have to deal with here. So when you have a racetrack like Arlington that has such a rich history, and even off the top of my head, I mentioned Storming Home already. So that race was won by Soleimani. I still remember Saeed bin Sarur being interviewed about being congratulated on winning the race. And then the tannoy goes and it's telling the fans that Storming Home has been thrown out and that Soleimani has been given the race. And the crowd boos. The Chicago crowd goes nuts. And Saeed bin Sarur is trying to talk to NBC and says, boo! And that's the passion of the American fans. But that race was wild. Jamie Spencer losing the race on Powers Court a year later. The jockey in second celebrating winning the race, which just looked so bizarre to me as well, because as an Irish and UK horse racing fan, getting used to the American rules. And then a year later, Kieran Fallon comes over and Powers Court gets his revenge. And Spencer would get his revenge a few years later as well for Aidan O'Brien in that race. It's had such a rich history of international raiders. It's had such a rich history for big name trainers to go and target. The idea that that's going to be gone now, it just seems so weird.
Yeah, the idea of moving it doesn't feel right, but maybe it would be the half measure solution we're going to have to deal with. It's obviously that meeting in recent years has turned into a little bit of a benefit for Chad Brown, and I get the idea of wanting to do something. I get the idea of this year not having had it, the idea of trying to get local horsemen a chance to get a bit more of a piece of the pie. But there's no doubt about it that day is great and should live. The idea of a midsummer turf festival, Breeders' Cup prep, it deserves a place on the calendar. And if not Arlington, I think that concept and perhaps even name can live on somewhere else. But again, I'm not fully willing to give up yet that we can't somehow pull a rabbit out of a hat here. But again, just not looking like the way it's going to go. Before we leave Arlington, though, I do, after talking about the history of it, John Henry, legendary USA runner, winning the first ever edition of it, is another one that should just get name checked along with some of those others.
Well said. Well said. Is there a fear that this could spread, that other tracks are in danger as well?
I think one of the lessons we saw in the pandemic with horse racing is the benefits of consolidation. And it's an awkward topic because I don't like positing a world that's ultimately a better world for the sport and the horsemen who are allowed to have their jobs continue. I don't want to be the guy who ever tells somebody they can't do their job anymore. But from a purely economic point of view, we were down to whatever it was, four tracks, fewer at points during the pandemic. And granted, it's a tough equation because there weren't other sports going on, but you saw the overall handle diminish only something like 7%. It's not hard to conceive that it would be better for fans and the sport of racing to have less racing and have it be staged more strategically, shall we say. It doesn't make sense that every track runs its best races between 4 and 8 on a Saturday. And we've seen some of the pandemic lessons be applied by the likes of Lone Star Park, now running cards Sunday through Wednesday. And it's great as a racing fan. I have good racing to watch 7 days a week. And doesn't take that much imagination to envision a world where you had sort of a major, mid-level, and minor circuits coordinated, and that the betting handle could actually, would, I believe, go up under such a circumstance, and it would be an easier sport to market and follow. Now, this is a pipe dream in that there's no governing body here. It's all every state controls its own racing and getting them to work together, you know, better luck with the Arabs and Israelis. But it is a world that I can envision. But again, even if I were made the boss tomorrow, I'd hate to have to decide which tracks could no longer operate, or which horsemen could no longer breed horses or whatever. It's some very like un-American ideas get tossed around in here. But if you were just doing this as a mind experiment, as a thought experiment, I think racing would be better off with some consolidation. Of course, Arlington Park would never be the place that I'd want to start with getting rid of in any case.
Let's move on to happier thoughts. Saratoga. And in this weird and wonderful world, the Travers Stakes takes place before the Kentucky Derby. And Tis the Law is a horse that we've talked about quite a bit on the show. And here in Ireland and the UK, he's 7-4 on. The best price is 8-11 about him. You've talked about him a lot on the podcast. He's a horse that you like an awful lot. Does he deserve to be such a short price going into the Travers?
I mean, that's probably short enough. He's more than 50% to win the race. I will say that. If there was odds against about, I would hoover it up. But I mean, that's a little intense when you've got a rival like Bob Baffert's Uncle Chuck, who looks truly like he could be any kind in amongst and against him. So you've got whatever Uncle Chuck's chance is, and then whatever the long shot's chances are. I wouldn't be laying that, but I wouldn't be in a hurry to be cutting in line and backing it either. If forced to give a top pick even at current prices, I'd be very much torn between Tis the Law's number and Uncle Chuck, and what I'm guessing Uncle Chuck's number is. What are you seeing him at right now?
11-4 about Uncle Chuck, and the best price you can get about Tis the Law is 8-11, but he's generally 4-7.
Yeah, I mean, at those numbers, it becomes a real jump ball. It's one of those things where my punter hat and my pundit hat, it depends which one I'm wearing. Because for my pundit hat, I've been with Tis the Law the whole time. So unless you tell me the number's something insane, like totally insane, like 2-5, I'm tempted to just stick with my guns. I've been touting Tis the Law since he won his first race. We sat down over at the Brentwood Hotel in Saratoga with Maggie Wolfendale, the Naira Paddock analyst, last year, and talked about two-year-olds who impressed her the most. And Tis the Law was at the top of the list. So I mean, we've been talking about him since his very first race. It feels almost churlish to get off him now, as long as the price isn't comically bad. But if I didn't have that baggage of having talked about this horse for a year as a potential Kentucky Derby Travers horse, just looking at the raw math, Uncle Chuck's the better bet at those two prices. I'll be honest with you. And I say this fully realizing I'm probably not going to pick him, but for the, I know you have a lot of serious punter listeners, and that 11-4 is rock solid price. He'll be shorter on the USA Tote come Saturday, whereas I think Tis the Law will be around that price or even possibly a tick higher. You know, I could see a full on 4-5 when the time comes. So we'll have to see. We'll see what they do in the betting markets internationally and on the USA Tote. But I mean, I'm with apologies for being uncreative. I mean, they're really the only two I can see winning this race. The other cases I'd make would just be the kind of case where it's like, well, it's racing and anything can happen. And that's not the kind of analysis I like to give. I like to talk about things I think are going to happen, not just deal with the full universe of possibilities. And in the realistic world, it really feels to me like it's Uncle Chuck and it's Tis the Law. And then there's everybody else. I will give a quick shout out for Max Player, a horse who's very cool and I think will be suited by the mile and a quarter and should be running late. But I just feel like for him to beat those two, you'd need the type of meltdown that I don't see happening pace-wise in terms of this race. But those will be the three that I end up mentioning in my various videos and columns. And that's how I see it. It's going to be a fascinating year this year's Travers, also with the angle that it is an important prep race for the Derby.
Yeah, and it's just so weird that that's the way it's going to work out. So Uncle Chuck for the Burger King himself, the maestro, Mr. I got a superstar, Baffert. And we'll have to see how Bob Baffert gets on. Nice to see the rapper Nelly having a runner. Country Grammar. I'm sorry, I couldn't resist it. Ride With Me, brilliant tune from back in the day. Look, you've been all over Tis the Law for, as you said, since the start of the year on the Final Furlong podcast, and he's already a very short price. Like, he's odds on with one firm for the Kentucky Derby. He's 11-8 is the top price you can get in the UK and Ireland about him, and we'll see on Saturday. It'll be live on Sky Sports Racing. It's going to be an interesting race. I guess the simplest way of breaking this down is you are with Tis the Law. If you wanted to have a bet right now, take Uncle Chuck, and when you're next asked this question, who's going to win the Travers Stakes, your answer will be, well, in my opinion, racing. Racing wins. Yes, proper fence sitting. A proper fence sitting job.
Yeah, I'll steal that line for sure. It's just so tough. You know, there's always this push and pull in punditry between being selection oriented, what's the most likely thing to happen, and being value oriented. Where is there a rick between the percentage of something happening and what the price is? And that's where it gets very, very tough. Usually I lean on being very selection oriented and will give up a point in the odds to pick the horse that is my horse, who I think is going to win. But this is a weird one where that horse for me at current odds is just a tick too short into the teeth of this Uncle Chuck, who not only has, you know, he's only run twice, but he's got terrific speed figures. And don't discount the fact that he absolutely demolished Thousand Words, who then went on to the Shared Belief at Del Mar and beat Honor AP, who was second in the betting before that for the Kentucky Derby. So this is serious form and figures for a horse who's only run twice. And we've seen before what Baffert can do with Justify, with a lightly raced horse doing things you're not supposed to be able to do in your third career start. Uncle Chuck has a similar profile. And speaking of Mr. Burger King himself, I do have to put in a little plug for my friend and colleague Jonathan Kinchin's JK Plus One podcast on the In the Money Network. Sat down with Bob for 2.5 hours this week.
Nice.
And they have a rapport, and it's an interview with him unlike any I've ever heard. Really fun and interesting. Listeners out there, if you like American racing, you presumably do because you're still listening when I'm on, and I would suggest that you check that out. You may want to investigate the 1.5 times speed option for the show just because of the time that it takes, but there's a lot of great info in there.
Oh, God, that's happened to listeners before. It's happened to me where I've been listening to How Did This Get Made or Football Weekly going, why are they sounding like they're on helium? Why are they talking so far? Oh, I've hit the 1.5 button by mistake. That has happened to us as well. Take me to the two earlier races. So we'll start with that race, 11:15 our time on Sky Sports Racing from Saratoga at the Travers Stakes. That's going to be a fascinating race, particularly leading up to the Kentucky Derby and indeed for the Classic as well. It's a must-see race. The Ballerina Stakes, the Grade 1 handicap for three-year-old fillies and mares on the main track over 7 furlongs. Phil is in on this one.
There's some very interesting storylines in this race. Is Serengeti Empress still the same horse she was when she ran so well up here in the Test Stakes, which I imagine we'll be talking about in a bit, mm-hmm. last year? She ended up just losing to Kafefi in that one, but it was really one of her best races ever, really on par, in my view, with her amazing run in the Kentucky Oaks, if not a little bit better in figure terms. But the last 2 days, she hasn't been the same horse. Now, granted, getting the cut back today, maybe she's just been running a little bit too far at the mile and a 16th and the mile and an 8th of the last 2 starts. Maybe the 7 furlongs hits her between the eyes. She can break, get away from there, and go on with it. Definitely a scenario that I could see happening. And then you also have the question surrounding Bellafina. Bellafina, who's got fantastic past races, but when you look at her overall form, this is where it gets tricky, because in California, her native California, I shouldn't say native, her home base of California, 12 for 12 in the forecast, and out of California has run 4 times and never run in the top two.
Ooh.
I'm going to go ahead. It's a little interesting. Does she really just love that home cooking? I think she's going to get an absolutely great trip. I trust Simon Callahan to be making the right decisions. I'm going to go with Bellafina in this race, which I think fans of Come Dancing may disagree with me, but it feels like it's supposed to play out like a match between these two rivals. I'm going to give narrow preference to Bellafina. Come Dancing is worth just another quick mention, just because she has, looks like she may be coming back into form and has done her best running locally at Saratoga. She won the Ballerina last year and is certainly deserving of consideration. But I'm going to hope that the narrative about Bellafina and her inability to ship gets a piece of the market and gives us a little bit of juice and lets us bet this one, who should really get a great trip against Serengeti Empress and the rest in this year's Ballerina.
Bellafina is currently 2-1. You can get the full race card for Saratoga at theraces.com for Saturday. You can see that race at 8:42. The last race we'll talk about then is the build-up to the Travers, the 10:39 our time, again live on Sky Sports Racing. It's the Longines Test Stakes, which was just mentioned by Pete. And the favorite, Red Hot, is Gamine. We go with that.
Gamine, that's it.
You mean I got it right? Oh my God. I'm having heart palpitations. I pronounced the name correctly at the first go. Gamine, Venetian Harbor, 11-4. And Mrs. Danvers then leads the outsiders way up in big prices. 16.0, 17.0 in fact, and 33s and beyond for the rest of them. Is it all about Gamine?
I think she is going to have a much tougher test today than she did the last day. I keep making that pun accidentally, but it's true. It's going to be a lot harder. I do feel like, as good as the last race was, and it was brilliant, that she did not only able to totally control the race, but I do think it was a track that was exaggerating the margins of front running scores. And I think Venetian Harbor, another one here who had looked brilliant earlier, now cutting back in distance, I don't think she's going to make this very easy on Gamine. I wish there were eight runners in this race, and then I would give you my no doubt about it. I absolutely love Mrs. Danvers to hit the frame in a non each way situation. I'm going to change it up a little bit, and I will take a little bit of a flyer with Mrs. Danvers, who I just feel like, make no mistake, on paper, she's not fast enough. But this is a three-year-old who's slowly improving in the hands of a trainer who can get them to peak in big grade one races in Shugmagehi. And I just think she's going to have the kind of setup, the kind of pace situation she's never seen before. She's never had the advantage of them going too fast up in front of her and being able to make one run and have her run through the lane, take them past them all. I think she might get optimal conditions to run her best race here. Will she pass both Gamine and Venetian Harbor? It's no certainty. It's not even all that likely. But I do think at 15.0, 17.0, it's a chance that is worth taking. And you can always use USA style exotics to back her up in second and third with the likes of Gamine and Venetian Harbor, just depending on how this race plays out. Wicked Whisper, another who should be up there trying to show early speed. This one is a bit of a stretch, but at the price, I'm going to try Mrs. Danvers in this year's Test Stakes.
If I was to ask you for the forecast, so the exacta, how would you play that?
I would think, the way I would probably play it would be to have both Gamine and Venetian Harbor figuring they, in my scenario, they're tussling early. And maybe one of them on the turn for home wins that fight, cracks the other, and goes on with it. And then Mrs. Danvers is the one to come and pass the other tired horse late. So I could probably see making a wager where it's Mrs. Danvers to win and then both Gamine and Venetian Harbor over Mrs. Danvers. That's probably how I'd play it. Also for trifectas, this one is another one that, on figures is a real stretch, but this horse should be any price in the market. Up in Smoke, I think will be ridden to get third, but simply because the grade one would mean so much later on her pedigree page. I could see her being held up to make one run. If they go too fast early, I still like Mrs. Danvers to get the jump on her. She'll be positioned ahead, I would imagine. But I could see Up in Smoke plodding by whichever of Gamine and Venetian Harbor doesn't win, whichever one loses the pace battle could be gassed enough to run fourth. It's conceivable. And at the kind of price you're going to have with a Gamine, Mrs. Danvers up in smoke, or Venetian Harbor, Mrs. Danvers up in smoke. I mean, those are going to be combinations that pay an awful lot. And then I'll probably also have a tri-cast that has Gamine, Venetian Harbor with Gamine, Venetian Harbor with Mrs. Danvers. And that's probably how I'll try to play this year's test. See if we can make a little magic happen. But no matter what, I'm just really it's a very interesting prospect to see if Gamine can back up that effort last time against a serious pace rival in Venetian Harbor. If she's left alone, Gamine's just going to roll. I mean, Gamine is clearly the most likely winner, but I think there's some reasons to try to get a little bit clever in the way we bet this race.
Well, you know, I love an exotic bet, so I'm all over the tricasts, the trifecta, the exactas, the forecasts. Gamine, Mrs. Danvers, up in smoke. If we did that and Venetian Harbor bombed out, or the other way around, oh, dearie me. We definitely will be off to Dubai. Even with the quarantining, we'll still be off to Dubai. But
bring Gamine, our own pod. But bring our own air.
We'll just go. We'll just go. We'll bring oxygen tanks and off we go on Fly Emirates. Other airlines are available. Maybe Gamine, Mrs. Danvers, Venetian Harbor. So if you just wanted to take a tilt like that. The race is live on Sky Sports Racing at 10:40, 10:39. Am I right in thinking that Mrs. Danvers is wearing the War Command Declaration of War colors?
She should. It's Joe Allen. So
yeah,
Joe Allen colors, which were, you know, been on many a race course over the last several decades. Just an incredibly accomplished breeder in the USA and internationally. And I think this one, she just vibes to me like one of these horses that is going to put in a very good effort given the hand she's in and given the fact that she's never seen I think she's built for this kind of pace scenario, and she gets it here on Saturday. Those prices are just too big.
And I really should have been saying that Gamine is clearly going to win this race by 10 lengths because she costs $1.8 million as a two-year-old. And as you know, Peter, if a horse costs that much money, they'll win every single race they run in, except for their second when they completely bomb out or are disqualified. But yes, clearly she will be bolting up on Saturday. I do love an expensive horse. The final question for you, my friend, before you resume to your normal life is, in all of your years in broadcasting, have you ever heard a good story about Ellen?
Ellen DeGeneres, you're talking about.
Has anybody ever said anything to you nice about her ever?
I knew somebody who worked for her, and she was tough, but I always thought it was that. I always read it as that kind of thing where, you know, to be female, to be a pioneer, to be the first sort of out female television personality, like you needed to have like a really thick skin and not take any crap from anybody. I was surprised. She's not a warm and fuzzy character, but you know, neither was David Letterman. I thought it kind of went with the, and I think back to just the portrayal of talk show hosts in media, whether you're talking about, you know, Gary Shandling's show or all the way back to the king of comedy. I think that job, I mean, personally, the last thing I thought I was going to be doing on the show today, Emmett, was coming on to defend Ellen DeGeneres. And I'll probably get canceled even just for saying these
things.
They're
coming for you, man. They're coming for you. The left is coming for you.
But I always thought that to be that on, and look, even in our jobs, I think we feel it sometimes. Like to be, when you're that on, sometimes you know, you're not. It's a little bit like a stick of butter, right? Like you're cutting off pieces of the stick of butter to be positive and to have good energy and to just be on all the time. And the idea that you wouldn't be on for your staff, like, I mean, isn't that what the money is for? I don't know. Maybe I haven't also read all the stories. Hopefully, there's nothing too awful that I've missed.
Oh, it's bad.
Okay. But I will do that. So let me just get out ahead of myself and say, I don't know what I'm talking about here about this situation. I'm just talking generally about the idea of talk show hosts being on versus off. It doesn't surprise me that they would have a dark side. And we've seen this in many real and fictional hosts over the years. But I guess this became a bridge too far in your perspective.
It's terrible. The thing that's very interesting about this is that the man who's replacing her is arguably as bad, if not worse. Like, James Corden is hated in the UK, and I rarely say anything about another broadcaster. Very, very rarely. He's not a pleasant man. He just isn't. And that's that. You can like A League of Their Own. You can like his show. He's a very good actor. But with him and Ellen, that point that you made about having to be on when you're on the air, you don't want to come on and bring your problems to a show. You don't want to come on and burden anybody. We're here to try and distract people, and we're here to try and inform and entertain our audience. But we all have burdens and we all have issues. And I wonder if for a show like Ellen's, I think that's 2 hours a day, isn't it? Daytime TV. So she's doing a 2-hour show 5 days a week. If the only way you can do that, doing that zany, quirky sort of nonsense, you know, coming out dancing onto the stage like an idiot, if the only way you can do that and be super nice the whole way through is if you have been faking it all your life. That's the only way you can do a 2-hour show like that 5 days a week, is that you have just been faking it the whole way through, because nobody can be like that. And it's wild how, I mean, look, the whole cancel culture thing is not something I like. They came for Gina Carano the other day because she was making a very valid point about love, and they came for her. It's nonsense. But in terms of Ellen, I'm not going to lose any sleep over it. And she's apparently, from what I've heard, has treated her staff abysmally over the years. But it's some interesting times.
It is. It's upsetting about Gina Carano. I'm a big fan of hers. Her turn in The Mandalorian, which I contend is one of the best things I've seen on TV.
Agreed.
Well, ever.
Agreed.
Was fantastic. Hopefully she'll be able to beat back the critics and the haters.
She's dealt with it really well. I mean, what she did was she just took them on. And she's been able to identify that most of the people who are having a go at her are using bot accounts.
Yeah.
And she's been able to identify all that. And look, she's Gina Carano. She would kick our asses left, right, and center. But she also seems to be nothing but a decent person. And she uses her platform for good. And she was genuinely making a point about love. And somebody just took offense to it and went for her. It's wild. Highly recommend.
I'm going to catch up on all this stuff. All I do, Emmett, is read form. I'm not into these pop culture goings on the social media. I need to, now that I've said some, you know, things that could be considered in defense of somebody who sounds like they've done some things that are tough to defend, I'll read up on the story.
To be clear,
I'm more prepared.
Peter Fornatale was not defending Ellen at all.
I just don't know the story. I mean, I was defending the idea of a talk show host being a kind of a jerk and as a boss. That idea has been around as long as there have been talk shows. But I you know, maybe there's some things in here that are bridged too far.
It's almost a given, I think, that somebody who is a megastar like that might be a jerk. And then when you discover they're not, it's such a bonus. But when you hear what she's done, it's, ooh, dear, you know. You mentioned The Mandalorian, so we're all trying to binge watch shows. I would highly recommend that as well on Disney Plus. Season 2 is coming out soon. I think it's September or October, which is...
I'm so glad they were able to finish it. I guess they just got it in the shooting under the gun.
Yeah, I think they filmed the seasons back to back. I think that's what they did.
Oh, okay.
So they're in post-production, is pretty much done. Whereas the Marvel shows aren't quite complete yet. They have to go back and do some other stuff. What else have you been watching or that you could recommend to our listeners in the UK and Ireland and indeed stateside?
My watching has been extremely limited. So I did just start my third rewatch of Mandalorian, just because I can't get enough of it.
Like, it's great.
It reminds me the being in that world is just so enjoyable to me, and I'm noticing new things every time. And it reminds me of when I was a kid, and my dad shot a TV pilot. I don't know if we've ever talked about my dad on the show, but he was a disc jockey himself.
We talked about that, but not the TV pilot though.
Well, it was short-lived. I mean, it didn't go. It was just a pilot, but he ended up like just obsessed with various things on TV to like hone his creative acts or whatever you want to say, to mix a metaphor. But anyway, we were like very, very early adopters of having a VCR, and he somehow got like what must have been more or less of a bootleg Star Wars VHS tape circa 1979, and I must have watched it 100 times. So it's fun for me to get back into that rhythm of just like watching a Star Wars show over and over gives me all the feels. I absolutely love it. But I did also recently do a full rewatch of Mad Men. Just rewatch that whole thing in order. That was largely my pandemic viewing, and that's another show that has aged very, very well. Some fantastic character stuff and world building. In that, and then just to go completely left on you, to go to another medium. So you mentioned, or I think we were talking off air about the future of cinema and the bummer of not having cinemas.
Yeah.
But they do still have drive-ins. And there is a drive-in movie theater in one town from Saratoga, the Malta Drive-In. So Susan and I my wife went on a proper date the other night for a double feature of Grease and American Graffiti.
Oh.
And watching American Graffiti, a movie, I can't get off of talking George Lucas tonight. The American Graffiti on the big screen for the first time in like on the car stereo through the magic of the drive-in this is another movie I've seen maybe not 100, but maybe 50 times, but I probably hadn't seen it in 5 years. Absolutely mind blowing. I've been meaning to write an essay about it. I have an essay clunking around in my head, actually comparing Star Wars and American Graffiti that I think is going to be okay when I finally get the chance to sit down and do it. Probably needs to wait till after the Breeders' Cup at this point, but we'll see. Maybe I'll be inspired and I'll make sure to tag you on the post when it comes out.
Oh, do, my friend, do. That's class. I'm glad that you're able to go to drive-ins. They're not really a thing here. There was one in Cork for a while. But yeah, the whole cinema industry is on its knees. And there's no sign of them opening here. And even if they did, even if they announced tomorrow in Ireland that cinemas are opening, what's going to be in them?
Yeah.
You know, Tenet's not coming out. Christopher Nolan was holding tough. He was holding Warner Brothers hostage almost and saying, no, we're sticking with it. We're going to July. All right, we'll do it in August. It's gone. And who knows? Who knows? But I was saying to you that Disney Plus are going to release Mulan for €30. You can watch Mulan on pay-per-view on Disney Plus. You have to be a Disney Plus subscriber. And the theory is that they're going to do the same for Black Widow. So $30. That's so Disney want your first child and your kidney. And then you can watch Mulan whenever you want.
That's aggressive, man. I could see 20. It's like you're still winning money as you're still ahead family of three having to watch at home. But don't we pay extra to go to the theater for the theater experience? Shouldn't it be discounted a bit more than them? I shouldn't be knocking Disney Plus after the new design of our InTheMoneyPodcast.com website attempts pretty much directly to rip them off. So I should keep my mouth closed. But
take that, Bob Iger.
I'm a big fan of the service, but that's aggressive. I'll tell you what, I will bet you if Mulan is at any theater in New York, it might be this Malta drive-in. I'll see if it's on the schedule. I'll let Perrin stay up way past her bedtime one night, and we'll watch Mulan down there for, you know, whatever it is, $20 for the car, and we'll sneak in a bunch of delicious food too.
Nice. Because the thing is, they released Trolls on demand, and it didn't work. It didn't make anywhere near the money that they thought it would, Trolls 2. And Anna Kendrick and Justin Timberlake were privately furious about the whole thing because they were going to get money on the back end of the box office. And then that's gone. And that was part of their deal. That was why they signed the contract they did. So it's a mess because all of these films now can't come out. And for the MCU, it completely distorts things because Black Widow ties into Falcon and the Winter Soldier and WandaVision. So those shows can't come out in Disney Plus till the film gets released. And when are cinemas going to be? That's a mess. It's a complete and utter mess. But here's a show to distract yourself. Chernobyl. Have you seen Chernobyl?
I've heard it's amazing. I don't know if it was a writer or director or showrunner interviewed on one of my other favorite podcasts besides Final Furlong to listen to, The Gist with Mike Pesca. And it sounded like the level of detail just sounded unreal. And I'm very excited to get a chance to sit down and check that out at some point. So that's good. You're giving that a full push. How many episodes is it and how long are they?
Because it's Sky Atlantic, there were ads. It's probably an hour per episode and there's only five.
gosh, not bad at all. That you could do that in a couple of days.
Easy. Oh yeah. Yeah. I did it in 3 days. It's a tough watch. It's not a pleasant watch.
Just because of the nature, great storytelling, but just the topic and the aftermath is difficult.
It's phenomenal storytelling. And even the way they tell it's not, they do it nonlinear, and their use of cinematography to allow the pictures tell the story is so brilliantly done. And the acting from Emily Watson, Jared Harris, and Stellan Skarsgård is off the charts good. It is just, it's on another level. And I didn't know as much as I should have known about the most devastating incident to happen in my lifetime, and what was given and sacrificed to make sure it didn't wipe out a continent. It's an incredible story, powerfully told. It's compelling. It's dark, but it's well worth watching. To distract yourself from that, Condor season one, I haven't seen season two yet, so I can't attest to that, but it's Jeremy Irons' son, Max Irons, and it's great. It's absolutely brilliant. I really enjoyed season one. And The Expanse, seeing as you like The Mandalorian and like sci-fi, The Expanse is on Amazon Prime. I'd highly recommend that. It's really, really good. I'm after flying through season one, I'm into season two, so there you go. There's your watching brief to keep you entertained as we wait for Saratoga on Saturday. My friend, I hope all is well with you. I hope that things are going to calm down over there. I think that you're going to have another 4 years of Donald Trump, but 4 years of Donald Trump might actually be better than 4 years of sleepy Joe Biden at the wheel.
Oh, stop with that. That's crazy talk. I don't know. The betting markets tell a different tale, and I'm hoping they're right on this one. But you've picked winning long shots before, so now you're making me sweat a little bit.
65% of Americans do not want to admit who they're voting for publicly, which means that's 65% of people voting for Trump. And on that bombshell, we're done. It's going to be some shock when the DNC announces that actually it's Hillary Clinton who's going to be running for president and not Sleepy Joe. Right. I've gone down the American.
I'm not sure where you're getting your news these days. Now, but I might send you some links.
There's some movement. Right, Pete. Enjoy the weekend, my man. Thanks so much for coming on, and looking forward to chatting to you again soon.
Cheers, my friend. This was great fun. Always fun talking racing with you, and always fun going on wild down the rabbit hole pop culture dives with you.
Has to be done.
Can't wait to do it again soon.
Has to be done. The In the Money Players podcast is essential listening for all things American racing, so make sure you check it out, and the In the Money Players podcast network as well, particularly that interview between JK and Bob Baffert. I'm off to listen to that myself. Talk to you soon. Thanks for listening. God bless.
Will it happen or won't it happen? You can bet on it with the Betfair Exchange, proud sponsors of the Final Furlong podcast.
Have you downloaded the free At The Races app yet? With easy-to-use race cards and form, expert daily tips, plus video replays and in-app betting, it's the app that no racing fan's phone should be without. Available for free on your iPhone or Android mobile, visit attheraces.com/app for more details.